One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Talia Bacassus.
And I'm Kim France.
And welcome to Everything is Fine. I was thinking that we needed to really riff on our Everything is Fine. Everything is fine. Through clenched teeth. Podcast for women over 40. And today we're speaking with Darcy Stenke, a writer, professor, and the author of the book Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life. So today we're talking about menopause. I feel like suddenly everyone is talking about menopause. Menopause is having a moment. It's like menopause is coming out of the shadows. Hey, Kim?
Yeah, I would agree. It seems like, I mean, I hate to say that something suddenly feels cool, but when Gwyneth Paltrow says it needs a rebranding.
Yeah, right. I know. The great one is Fleabag, right? Did you see that episode?
Yes.
That was amazing.
Yes,
yeah.
That was so good.
That was so good.
There was a clip in Broad City where they said something along the lines of menopause is just not represented in the mainstream media.
Huh.
Excuse me. Do you have any chance of a tampon?
Oh, my goodness, no. I'm flattered you asked, even though many women my age do experience spotting.
Oh, I totally forgot about menopause.
Menopause isn't represented in mainstream media. Like, no one wants to talk about it.
And there are books about it, such as yours, and your book is actually the one that I've seen be the most talked about. Why do you think there's been so much shame and secrecy traditionally around menopause up until now?
Well, I think there are many reasons. I mean, I think we have to remember that it's only been about 100 years in which women could, you know, support themselves and live independently. And before that, you know, according to the patriarchy, we were most valuable for fertility. And so when that period ended, I think there was a lot of not just shame, but like fear that we would no longer be like of interest to men, you know. And so I think that, I mean, we're really talking about our survival, you know what I mean? Like our survival was attached to men for a long time. So the importance of being like appealing to them was a really big deal. So I think that's part of it. I think there's a fear, like a fear of vulnerability, of lack of fertility, not just not being sexually appealing to men, but, you know, for our very survival, you know, so there's that.
Our usefulness.
Yeah. And then I also think there's been a disconnect between mothers and daughters, you know, since there's so much shame. Like, I talked to so many women. I think I interviewed 100 women for my book, and almost all of them said that their mothers didn't even say a word to them. Their mothers either suffered in silence or, you know what I mean? Like, so there was like a disconnect between talking about it between mothers and daughters. So that's a big thing too, that there wasn't a lot of knowledge about it, just sort of, you know, orally, you know, transported. So there's that. I mean, I just think the whole thing needs to be normalized. Like, I think in sex ed, you know, we can talk about like puberty and menstruation and childbirth, but then we should just talk about like menopause in a really normal way. It's like a normal female life stage, you know, like without a lot of like, oh no, this terrible thing's going to happen to you. You know what I mean? Just like, it's a normal female life stage. Like, it needs to be normalized. You know, that's, I think that will help the shame a lot.
And is that what made you decide to write about menopause?
Well, what happened to me really as I started to go through it when I was around 52, and I was starting to have hot flashes, was having trouble sleeping, feeling very disoriented in my life, and I just looked around for books. I'm a writer, so I always look for books to try to understand what's happening to me, and I just found so little. You know, there was a few medical texts that were okay. All the memoirs ended with, you know, hormone therapy, which I'm not against. I'm not going to judge anybody, but then that stopped the idea of thinking about menopause once the hormones were taken, which isn't really true because it's such a, you know, it's a major transition that is is physical, spiritual, I would argue even metaphysical. So I decided I would write my own book, because there wasn't anything that I could find, And then also this idea of the whales, I found out that the two creatures that go through menopause are human women and female killer whales. So that really thrilled me. And I found out that the killer whales at around 45 or 50 become the pod leaders, the post-reproductive pod leaders of their, communities and families.
That's so nice.
So it's a leadership model, which, really, it's amazing that I had to find a creature, like an animal, to lead me through menopause in like a positive way. Like I couldn't really find that many models, female models.
In the human world.
Exactly, yeah.
Killer women.
Killer women, yeah. Or post-reproductive pod leaders is what I want to think about, yeah.
Just to backtrack a second, because maybe some of our listeners are in perimenopause. Did you go through perimenopause as well?
I mean, I think I did, though. I never really named it, I mean, I was definitely had some fluctuations, I think, of mood. And it's hard for me to remember now. But I think, I think I did have some of those symptoms. I mean, I remember talking to my doctor about some of the things, some of the sexual changes and the emotional changes. And, she never even mentioned menopause, which is sort of strange.
Really strange.
Yeah. Or perimenopause. But not that unusual as far as the doctors that the women that I talked to, they were all kind of left on their own to do a lot of Googling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it feels like perimenopause is even less understood than actual menopause, because in some ways it's indistinguishable from regular aging.
I mean, there's some things that are menopausal, but there's some things that are just aging. As people get older, they have trouble sleeping. As people get older, their roles change, So I think there's a way in which menopause has really been demonized, and blamed for a lot of stuff that's just about humans getting older.
Yeah, although I'm perimenopausal now, I would say menopausal, but every, 6 months or so, my period just comes back.
Yeah, right.
And my sleep has been completely disrupted.
Right, yeah.
It's such a bummer.
It's the worst. I have this, I think it's a very typical hormonal thing where I just wake up at 4 a.m. and I'm awake and that's just it. So I think I'm also in perimenopause. I also have just a lot of irritability.
Yeah.
And that, I don't even know what it comes from, but I'm assuming it's perimenopause. I mean, did you guys see that Baroness von Sketch clip where they're trying to figure out if this woman is going through perimenopause, but the symptoms are so vague, nobody really knows. And they're like, am I really at the right age? She's like, am I?
Maybe it's perimenopause.
You think?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know. Is it? No.
No.
I still wear a jean jacket.
Yeah.
I still drink out of a mason jar.
But you're hot for no reason, so is it?
Is it?
Is it?
No.
Maybe?
Fuck.
She ends up at her doctor, and her doctor's, she says, is it perimenopause? And he's like, I don't know. She's like, is it? Is it? Nobody literally knows what perimenopause is.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, it was very good. The sleep is a big one for me as well. It's brutal.
Yeah, that's, if you can't sleep, you can't really do your life. That's hard. Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah,
they use sleep deprivation as a torture technique during war. And now that I've had nights I've literally not slept a drop.
Yeah, I had that too at the beginning, yeah.
I can completely understand that.
I mean, I felt like I did get a little, I think it's like a diazepam, a little 10 milligrams to help me sleep. But I also think I got used to not sleeping in a weird way. You know what I mean? I still get up maybe 3 or 4 times a night, but I'm kind of used to it now. I don't know. It's not as disruptive as it once was.
It's early baby years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So tell listeners, what does the subtitle of your book refer to when you say the vindication of natural life?
Well, I love the word vindication, and that's partly because of Mary Wollstonecraft's The Vindication of the Rights of Women. I actually have her on my T-shirt right now, too. It's just about, as I went through menopause, I really felt like I was an animal, kind of, like a creature inside of a life cycle. And that gave me a lot of, besides really getting obsessed with the whales, it gave me a lot of feeling of power and security to feel that way. So I wanted to sort of say that, at least for me, menopause didn't have to be a thing that was medical, medicalized and debased. It was a natural part of life. So that's the sort of aim of the book, is taking it back from this idea that it's this terrible catastrophe That has to be medicated and is the worst thing that ever happened to a woman, and back to like just a normal part of life that is definitely, you know, tricky. There's lots of struggles, but also has some gains, you know, like some some things that are really positive about it as well.
Can you talk about some of those gains?
Sure. Well, for me, I'm kind of on the back side.
Like, please,
yeah,
please.
Yeah,
us.
Yeah.
Please.
I'm on the back side now. So let's see. All right, so I'm 57. So let's see. So I think the gains are, I mean, some of even the, I guess I want to go back and say, I think even some of the trials, I think were necessary for me. Like, I feel like even the hot flashes, some which were difficult. Like, sometimes I had probably 10 to 20 a day. They were very disruptive.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
But I sometimes feel that it was almost like they were like, it was sort of like a spiritual graduate school. You know what I mean? Like, they were like burning off my old self, you know, some ideas of my old self as a woman, so I could sort of go into my new self, you know, like a my new sort of, you know, older, you know, crone self, you know, so
like a literal rebirth.
Yeah, exactly. So they were like necessary. And even my insomnia, like, which, you know, sometimes drove me crazy, particularly if I had to do something in the morning, you know, but to be up at night sometimes, you know, I was able to, I can remember it was a long period of like thinking through my life, thinking about the things I've done. I mean, not just the things I wish I had done differently, but just thinking about just, you know, kind of the expanse of my life, you know, I was up at night sort of wandering around thinking about, you know, my childhood and my first marriage. And it was like my life, I think, started to seem very valuable. I mean, even more valuable to me, my history, like it was my life and that made it meaningful. So those nights of insomnia weren't really wasted. You know, there was something sort of beautiful about that as well. So now on the other side of it, I feel, well, I mean, you know, you don't menstruate, which is great. You know, I mean, it's hard to menstruate. You know, people act like, oh, the fertile woman. But, you know, I mean, cycling is a drag, you know. And
I
also,
I hate it.
And also, like, I was very unsteady sometimes. You know, I've always, my whole life, I've struggled, you know, with depression. And through the month, the hormone cycle is very destabilizing in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like you have your period and then your hormones rise and then they drop off. And, you know, so that to me, to be outside of that, you know, has been a real gain.
So do you think that your mood is more even now?
Yeah, I do. I do think it's more even now. I think it's more steady. And I also think I have more, like, I mean, the hormonal landscape, I mean, the menopausal landscape is a lot like those days before your period, but you get used to living there. And, I always tell my daughter, I have a 23-year-old daughter, and I tell her, you know, don't let the world tell you that you're a bitch during those days or you're like, you know, crazy. No, those are the days that the hormones lift, you know, the veil of, you know, domesticity and sort of being, you know, being malleable kind of lift. And you see your life like kind of clearly. And my argument is that you're grumpy because sometimes you're not happy about like certain things about your life because you see it clearly. It's not that your hormones are crazy and you're a bitch. So that lucidity, you start to live within that lucidity of lower hormones, and it's kind of an amazing place to be. You know, it's like
that sounds, yeah, you make it sound good then.
It's, yeah, it's very good. There's a lot of wonder. There's a lot of lucidity. There's a lot of facing reality directly. There's a lot of ability to sort of meditate and be centered, you know? I don't know.
Well, you hear a lot of people say things about, like, you give less fucks. Like, that's the big expression that you hear.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, you care just mostly about the things that really, like, are meaningful to you. And you say no more, you know, to stuff that you don't want to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. So That feels like the wisdom of aging.
Yeah, that's a very cool thing. And you care less about what people think. I mean, you know, I really only care, like, even my, you know, my sexuality, my attractiveness, like, I really only care, like, if my husband thinks I'm, you know, appealing. You know what I mean? I'm just not going to work, you know, to make the world think I'm sexy anymore. Like, you know, that's over. And seems kind of dumb in retrospect, too. You know what I mean? So
we're going to take a quick break for some ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to Everything is Fine.
Can you talk a little bit about like the softening of your intellectual acuity?
Yeah.
I worry a little bit about like getting dumber.
Yeah, right. I think I say this in my book too. That was my one concern actually. Like, because I don't care as much about, you know, how I look or whatnot. But as far as the studies, I read a lot of studies about this, and they all said. I mean, I can remember one study. She had tested fuzzy thinkers like after menopause, and it turned out that the fuzzy thinkers had actually better recall than the women who thought they didn't have.
Huh.
Yeah. So there really isn't a lot of proof to prove that. First of all, that's mostly like a medical. It's not really true. I mean, I actually don't think that's really true. Actually, I mean, I have a little less name recall. I mean, whether it's menopause or whether it's just aging. I mean, who knows, right? I don't feel like my like intellectual abilities are lesser at all. I think they're even like a little better as I know what I'm doing better, especially in my work and my writing. Like I know what I'm doing better. I understand what I'm good at. I think I can make like connections more easily because I know more and I have more confidence, mm-hmm. which to me, that's what the intellectual life is about, is making connections, right? So I don't really feel that at all. And it's also a difference. I mean, it kind of depends on what you mean when it comes to sharpness. Like, am I interested in repartee now, like being all sharp? No. You know what I mean? Like, I'm more interested in having like, you know, if I'm going to have a conversation and spend the time doing it, like I want to have a deep conversation with somebody, like about things that matter. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So it's less about being clever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and witty.
I'm just not that interested in that anymore. Yeah.
That sounds refreshing.
Hmm. Yeah.
I know. God, so much less pressure.
Yeah. Right.
I find that in my relationship, like my husband and I talk less and less, and it doesn't feel like a bad thing. It feels like a comfort.
Yeah. I find that in my relationship too. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
We're just being ourselves around the house kind of thing.
Yeah, we read or we'll read simultaneously or we have a lot of things to talk about, but we also are more and more comfortable just being together. I think that's true.
Can you talk about the idea in your book of the creature wanting to get out? That the incredible Hulk imagery that you used was really resonant.
Right. I mean, that was in my first hot flashes, I definitely felt like my body was a cage. You know what I mean? Like, and I was like, what? Like, I'm just completely hot and I just want to escape from my own body, you know, which was not a sensation that I had before, you know, so that was very strong. I mean, now when I look back about that time, I think to myself, there was a creature that wanted to get out, and that creature was really cool. You know what I mean? And she got out. Actually, eventually, you know, but at the time there was a certain amount of panic for sure, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think of also the Incredible Hulk as being really angry.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was another thing is I mean, a lot of the women that I interviewed and I myself, too, sort of got, I feel like I got in touch with my anger, you know, through menopause a lot. I felt more able to be angry, more aware when I was angry. I think I wasn't even aware, you know, when I was angry sometimes, which is so sad. But I think like is sort of a female condition. So I think I came to terms more with my anger and I was willing to do things about it.
Like what?
Like definitely some things with my husband. I realized that like I could just be reasonable, but like a little anger goes a long way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely true.
You know, a little bit like I say in my book, like fucking do the kitty litter. You know, I do it every time, you know. Mm-hmm. And he seemed to be able to hear it when I got a little bit more angry. So that was interesting. And I continue to use that technique.
Like maybe as a choice, you say to, like instead of saying I'm just going to grin and bear it, you're like, no, fuck, I'm going to get angry this time. And that's going to work better.
Yeah. I mean, grin and bear it. But also sometimes like in a reasonable way saying like, you know, that doesn't always work, you know, like saying like, you know, I did the dishes 20 times this week and you did them 2, you know, but just getting mad, you know, and being just like, this is ridiculous.
A little bit of irrationality can make a big impact.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's irrational. I feel like to say, you know,
it's true.
I mean,
it's true.
maybe some people's partners are better than my partner, but like, you know, there's still a sense that the domestic sphere like is my sphere.
And when you're not alone.
And when he does things, he's helping me, which is bullshit, you know. So I try to like work on that a little through, and I am actually angry, and why not express it, you know? Actually, so there's that, and then also like anger. I mean, this is a time to be angry a lot, right? Like in the world, so I let that go too, some, you know. I also try to find ways to, you know, if I'm angry about, you know, politics or whatnot, I try to find ways to like resist or protest or make phone calls or whatever. But I also let myself just be angry as well. Hmm. Yeah. Which I find to be kind of generative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always thought anger could have great power to motivate.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but it is so distinctly traditionally unfeminine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're really considered, well, it goes right to like, you're a bitch, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you like immediately are a bitch, you know, like, which is really unfair. I mean, we need to have all the emotions, you know what I mean? Like, we're humans, you know, we need to have all the emotions. Just like men. It's just not fair, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was something that completely surprised you about menopause?
That completely surprised me. I mean, definitely some of the sexual changes were really surprising. I mean, I had known about the it's hard not to know about the hot flashes because they're made fun of and you sort of knew. And I maybe knew a little bit about the sleeplessness, a little bit about the disorientation, but the sexual changes really surprised me, you know, that certain positions, like, for instance, penetration just was not as comfortable anymore, you know, and I wasn't as interested in it either, you know, so that surprised me.
What would you say to women? I mean, I'm going through this a little. I'm definitely seeing a drop in my sex drive, and I'm not happy about it,
you
know, at all.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to women who are kind of newly bereft over losing this?
I mean, I definitely went through that phase as well, where I just, my desire just wasn't as, it changed. I mean, it just wasn't as high, you know, like it wasn't at, I mean, it was probably not at a 10, you know, even before menopause, but it was probably at like a 6 or a 6 maybe, you know, and it probably dropped down to a 3 or a 4. But, and I remember feeling worried about that. But then I had to think to myself, why am I worried about that? Like, that's actually how I feel. You know what I mean? Like, am I worried because of how my husband's going to react to this, or, you know, how my relationship is going to work, how I'm going to feel during sex? And so when I really thought deeply about it, I thought, you know, I want a sex life that's based on my actual desires.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want it. Like, I did talk to some doctors. It was really sad to me. Like, this one hormone doctor in the West Village, like, I asked her about her patients, and she sort of said, my patients don't expect to enjoy sex. They just don't want it to hurt. You know, they're talking about penetration.
I read that. Yeah, that's in the book, right?
That is messed up, man. I mean, that is depressing, you know? And that kind of like woke me up. I was like, okay, wow. Like, not that like intercourse isn't great, and not that that's still an option for me sometimes, but there's a lot of other things on the menu. You know, I mean, there's a lot that you can do that's really fun and really exciting in bed. And I feel like it's it makes sense in a way that maybe like at midlife, our desire is different. Like if we're no longer fertile, then the idea, clearly we wouldn't all be here if it wasn't for intercourse. Right. But once your fertility has changed and that drive is different, you know, it kind of makes sense that maybe like intercourse isn't your favorite thing in the world. Right. I mean, so maybe you would move toward some other things that, you know, are pleasurable. I mean, I think that the thing to remember is, like, communication with your partner, like, or partners, and, you know, and then also stuff like, I mean, lube is really good, you know? You know, lube works great, you know? So, like,
I hear a lot about coconut oil.
Yeah, coconut oil is great, you know? So, like, just a lot of communication and a lot of openness to what is intimacy? You know, what is sexual? You know, I think that's really important. And those things did really surprise me. But they kind of turned out to be, it turned out to be kind of great. Like, I have to say, like, you know, since I've moved away from like the fertile sexual script, you know, foreplay, intercourse, I feel so much more, I feel much closer to my husband. I mean, partly because we've had to negotiate things more and, you know, we've had to talk about stuff, but also just the intimacy involved is a lot deeper, you know.
I've known you a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when we were young.
Yes, when we were young.
You were
so
really
long.
You were a really like sexy chick.
Oh, thank you.
That felt like a part of your identity.
Interesting, yeah.
Do you feel like, I mean, you're still a sexy chick.
Thank
do you. Feel
and so
like
are you, Kim. Yeah, yes.
Now that we've gotten that
But let's go back. Wait, so we've known each other for 30 years. Is that right?
We've known each other about 30 years.
Yeah.
Since this early 90s.
I remember at Abby's, my daughter's baby shower, like you brought her the cutest little, because it was during grunge rock. The cutest little like gray, like gunge.
It was like a corduroy grunge jacket. Rack.
Yeah, corduroy. It was so cute. Brown. A little brown corduroy jacket that she wore forever. She looked just like a tiny little Courtney Love in it. It was really cute. It was so cute.
Darcy happens to have one of the coolest daughters.
Yeah, I'm really lucky. Nice. I have an amazing daughter. Okay, so.
But giving that up, like that's something, you know, I go back and forth about thinking I'm attractive, but I've generally thought like I'm at least a little sexy. And that's that's something I don't want to give up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like to think that I'm still also like sexually attractive, but like I said, to myself and to my partner, and I don't know, I just think the idea of like having to be like the sexiest woman in the room all the time, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And it's like, to me, it's really been, I've enjoyed giving it up. I feel like there's so much more energy for me in like doing the things that I want to do and working on my projects than worrying about how I look all the time.
Right.
Like, you know, and it's true. I think earlier, like, yeah, I think being trying to be attractive. I mean, I was always really interested, you know, like you were trying to be stylish too. That was a thing, right? You know, would try to be dressed in an interesting way, like whether it was thrift store clothes or whatever.
And but that, do you still do that?
I still have that. Yeah. I'm still interested in that. Like, I still like, you know, I mean, my daughter and I kind of share that, which is fun too.
Because for me, it's not necessarily about sexiness, which has not been a big priority for me, but it's, I have found a lot of my identity in being feminine.
Yeah,
and
right.
So I'm scared of, I can already see that my face looks more masculine than
right,
I used to.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I think I have that too. I think most women have that. I mean, I don't know that, I write about that in my book too. I feel like the gender changes, you know, I've just felt a little less tightly feminine, I would say, like, and a little less, just not defined as much by my femininity and not really wanting to prop my femininity up. You know, I'm just not interested in it. You know, like, I don't know. I also think like the things I've always really loved have been androgynous, like David Bowie and like, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's like, also, I think that's deeply sexy. I think androgyny is really sexy. I think this is a hard thing to talk about, though, because there's so many jokes about menopausal women, you know, looking like men, you know, which is not
right.
What I'm talking about. Like, what I'm talking about is sort of a very powerful new sexual identity, which has to do with maybe not being quite as tightly feminine, but being more androgynous and being cool with that, you know,
right.
and bringing your authentic self, you know, to your sexual like encounters. And that like authentic self might mean feeling a little more androgynous, you know, maybe not like being as femme as you once were, you know. And I mean, to me, there's a lot of power in that. I just don't think femininity is a worthwhile goal, I guess.
Yeah.
Like anymore. Like I used to, but now I don't. Yeah.
It sounds like you found a lot of freedom.
Yeah. I really like it. Yeah. I mean,
in your new self.
Yeah. It's a lot better. I mean, it's a lot better. I'm definitely more, I'm more confident. Because, you know, if you go, like if you lead with your femininity and your sexual self, your sexy self, the payoff is what other people think of you. Like if you succeeded, you know, it's based on other people. It's not based on you, you know? That's sort of dangerous. I mean, whenever you put your self-worth in somebody else's hands, that's a terrible situation.
You wrote in the book about how one of the side effects that somebody found that one of the side effects of menopause was empathy.
Mm.
We've talked a little bit about some of the upsides
uh-huh.
of menopause. What are some other ones? Please.
Yeah, yes. In some ways, like the false self is broken down, right? And so you feel more malleable, you know? Like I felt, and that's, you know, part of like what the book is about, more malleable to other creatures, more malleable, more vulnerable and more able to connect with a wider range of people. I definitely have felt that, you know.
You wrote a really nice line, since I stopped my struggle to be beautiful, I'm overtaken by beauty more often.
Yeah, I really feel that. Like I can feel like I can sink into it more. Like I have, like I live right near Prospect Park in Brooklyn. And I walk in that park almost every day and it's just almost like a new and different experience since I've been in the last 10 years. Like I feel less in my head, you know what I mean? Less like always thinking about everything, but more just really sort of in it. And I can really absorb the beauty of the natural world more. And also even seeing, like, there's a place in the park where, like, Asian brides come to have their picture taken.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, like, I've seen that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I have found that to be so moving, you know. I don't know. And, like, I don't think 10 years before it would be, like, sort of interesting but okay, you know. But, like, I don't know. I'm just able to sort of feel the wonder of the world more.
It sounds like, I mean, do you feel less ambitious?
I would say no.
I'm just wondering. Maybe, you know, a few years ago when you're walking through that park, you would have been like thinking about your work, thinking about career.
That's the part that's like still really going strong, I would say. And even maybe getting a little more so, you know, since my daughter's out of the house, my domestic duties are somewhat over, right? So I can like really throw myself at my work. I mean, I think the idea of walking in that park is more like it might be that the conduit to my ambition is changing, you know, where like earlier, it's true. Maybe I was thinking like, oh, you know, my work, you know, can I work on this thing to get my book placed in different ways? Who can I meet? Whatever. And now it's more like, no, the way I'm going to do the best and be the most ambitious and get the word out is by sinking deeply into myself, you know, and not worried so much about all the connections and all that. So it's a different way of thinking about like myself and my work and my ambition. But I think the ambition's the same. Yeah.
I definitely don't feel like I compete as much with other people as I used to. In my 20s and my 30s, I was horrible.
Yeah.
I felt really? So competitive with so many people.
I didn't really feel that, but
Ann Powers. Why does Ann Powers get all the assignments?
Yeah. No, well, that's also
a much better writer.
Well, no. Well, also, you know, the world that you were in, female music writers was so small. And so there was, you know what I mean? It's like a small cake and you know, how's it being sliced? You know, like, I know what I hear you on that. I feel like I definitely felt more competitive with different people, which was just insecurity, it seems now.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I definitely feel more. I feel like I've always sort of tried to help other people and help other women, but now it's more. I try to build, you know, build alliances, you know, rather than like worry about like territory.
Right.
That's like definitely new more. But I feel like I always sort of did that, but it's getting more because you just realize it's not a good strategy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't really work.
It doesn't get you far.
It doesn't really work, you know? So, yeah. I just sort of wonder if that's not hormonal, too, in a way, though. You know what I mean? When you're kind of staking your ground.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're like, it just seems like, to me, that seems a very hyped up hormonal thing.
Certainly felt very visceral at the time.
I agree, yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
It makes me think of Anne Friedman and Aminatou Sow. They have this thing called shine theory that's like for you to shine, other people have to shine. So the only way to succeed is by lifting other women
up.
That's
so true. Yeah.
Yeah, really. And it's a relief.
So
it feels
relief.
Like a relief.
I agree. It's so true. And two men do it all the time. Men do it. I mean, men like get in groups and build each other up.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And they also have a lot more. They have a much easier time around competition. It isn't personal. And it becomes so personal with women, I think, often.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think you're probably right about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've pretty much breezed through our questions.
Yeah.
I know. Well, thank you so much, Darcy, for coming to talk to us. And I want to encourage everybody to go get your book, Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life.
We're your hosts, Tali Abacasis and Kim France. Darcy, do you want to tell people how to find you?
I'm on Instagram and I'm on Facebook. And I mean, the best way is actually my website, which is darcysteinke.com.
Great.
Yeah.
If you like the show, be sure to rate it and write us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have suggestions for show ideas or anything else, email us at taliandkim@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram that is EIF Podcast. You can find me on my blog, girlsofacertainage.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming, Darcy.
Thank you so much.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.